that's striking about at least what the Agoda seems to be saying about itself is that it considers Seder to be very important. Obviously, we call this Seder, so it must have a Seder. And, don't smash up the phone. Now, this aspect of Seder is not only because we call the mitzvah saliva al-shem Seder, but because there's supposed to be a very, very deep aspect of Seder in terms of the whole Sidrei Maaseh Bereishis that are in this gala over here, where we talk about the Etzem Hayom Hazeh, the instantaneous nature of the Geula, the fact that this was a Laila HaMeshumer Ubo HaMesheshit Mei Beshit, this was a time that was Miyucha, this exact instant by Yibachatzi Allah, so on and so forth. We find a tremendous stress on the way that this was supposed to happen at the precise moment, in the precise way, and so on and so forth. So maybe it's not surprising that we would call the events of the night a Seder. It's not usually what we refer to when we talk about doing mitzvahs. The problem is that the Agoda even begins with Simonim. Simonim HaSeder. And you know that many people, I assume most of you, actually sing the Simonim. You know that it's become part of the Agoda itself, because apparently the issues of Sidrei HaAgoda are so important that we were even Koveya Sibit in order to make sure that we do it right. But the fact that we include that implies that it's teaching us something about the need for Seder. So that the Simonim, whatever other Rimozim they may have, and of course all kinds of different Svarim that give Rimozim to them, the point is that however we understand them, the order of events is absolutely essential in the Haggadah. Now the problem with that is that if one looks through the Seder, and unfortunately, you know, maybe it would have been better if we had been upstairs because we had a board, but if you consider the issues of the Seder, they're an absolute mess. A mess of unanswered questions or unquestioned answers, which also pop up just about equally. All kinds of tangential stories that are very disturbing. A completely meandering narrative that doesn't seem to have a really clear beginning or a clear end. And to call that type of creation a Seder, that the Haggadah, which we pointed out last time, seems to be based on the notion of the word God, which implies structure, interconnections, the way that things are arranged, that this is the way that the Haggadah should be arranged is very, very difficult to understand. So let's take your Haggadahs out. Let's go through the so-called Seder of the Haggadah and see whether it makes any kind of sense. And when we discover that it doesn't, see whether we can make sense out of it. Beginning is not so bad. Kadesh, that's fair. So we have to begin, at least it would appear we have to begin with Kadesh. I want to point out to you that that's certainly not the case when you think about it, because a little bit later on, we do this whole Olat V'Anya jazz, and over there we say, I mean, obviously we're not inviting the people in after we've already finished making Kiddush and done our class. I mean, it's a little silly. If we're being serious about those words and they're not just a formula, then we have to be inviting people in before Kiddush, not after Kiddush. So, I mean, even Kadesh is not that obvious that we should begin with. Maybe we should have put that first part, before Kadesh, and then maybe just say something about Halak Ma'anya at the beginning of Margit, but why begin with Kaddish and put it off till later? Something of a problem. Now, Urukov, sort of a funny kind of thing. I mean, it turns out that we don't really need to do Ruchitas Yadayim here, except for a very silly reason. We want the kids to ask the question as to why we're doing the Tilt Yadayim twice, so we're hoping that they'll figure out that if we did it now when we're not really ready, we're doing Tibol, so Mimela, we're doing the Yilat Yadayim for the Tibol, and so So for some reason, instead of doing what we normally do, we do workouts at Karpas. Of course, once we do Karpas, we have to do workouts because we're going to be dipping the Karpas. And if you have wet hands, then you have to wash them. So we end up washing our hands twice. Now, I mean, it's a little difficult to understand why we would put in the workouts separately. I mean, everybody knows if you're going to eat bread, you need to have Nityos Yadayim. I mean, we don't need to say to say, okay, do Nityos Yadayim, then eat the bread. I mean, that's rather obvious. If you're going to be eating Karpas, you need to have Nityos Yadayim before. That we should call this a separate stage in Nagada doesn't make all that much sense. But okay, let's accept it. People didn't want them to forget, whatever. So we do workouts of Karpas, and we'll excuse the Karpas because we want the kids to ask. Which is a very, very weak kind of excuse, but it's all that the Gemara seems to offer. Then we go on to Yachas. Also not at all clear. It's true that we need to have a broken matzah. The question is, why do we have to break the matzah? What would be wrong if we start off with a broken matzah? Would we welcome oni? The derech of an oni, the Gemara says, is with prusa, with a broken matzah. So if you would bring a matzah to the table in the first place, that would be broken. If you're worried about lechemishta, put it between two whole matzahs, which is what we do anyway. But to say we have to go ahead and break the matzah at the table seems to be pushing it a little bit. And what's the difference if we break it before we break it afterwards? This is such an important issue that it's been brought in our local. What happens if your matzah is broken? You don't have another matzah. Do you have to stop the Seder and bake a whole matzah to be able to break the matzah? Incredible. Why would this be important? Again, that's not a problem with the organization, other than the fact that it's stressing the issue of something that we wouldn't have thought is important for the Seder would just be part of what we bring in the first place, part of the preparation for the Seder, not the Seder itself. Here it turns out it's part of the Seder for some reason. Okay, Magi. That's the main issue, Magi. So, we start off with Halach Manya. Now, we already pointed out that Halach Manya makes no sense at all. But this is something everybody knows. Halach Manya doesn't make any sense. Because you can't possibly be saying, Kol Dechlin Yesi V'Yecho, if you were referring to the beginning of your meal, which you're already in the middle of, you can't possibly say, Kol Dechlin Yesi V'Yitzhak. Number one, you don't have a Korban Pesach. Number two, if you did have a Korban Pesach, you couldn't invite anybody to it at this stage. Because the din is that a Korban Pesach can only be Ne'echa L'Minyuyah. L'Minyuyah means that people have to be with you, they have to be Shufim with you, they have to be partners with you in the Korban Pesach before the time of the Achilas Korban Pesach, which means during the day. That was the latest time for them to join you. So certainly at this point, there's no way you can invite anybody to your Seder who were a real Seder. The real Seder would include the Korban Pesach. So why are we saying this? Then we say this business of Hashat HaHachal, the Shana Abba Barad Yisrael, it's all very sweet, but that comes at the end of the Haggadah. I mean, that's supposed to, you know, we think of Shana Abba Yerushalayim and all of that, it's very fine. Why would we begin the Haggadah with the words, L'Shana Abba Hashat HaHachal, L'Shana Abba B'nei Chorin? To some extent, it seems to almost undo the meaning of the Haggadah to say Hashat HaHachal, and we're celebrating Cheiros. Why is it here? Then we go into this Manish Tana Laila Hazeh. Now, we already pointed out that this manishtana can't mean what people think it means. It can't mean that there are four questions. Because there aren't four questions. There's really only one question. The question is manishtana laila zemikola laila. So you say, okay, well, fine. We put the question here, as we explained, because we have to be more of consciousness. That's the way that we're more of consciousness. Now that we have the question, the children are going to be able to hear our answer. And so we start off, very hopefully, it sounds good. We start off with Avonim Ayu L'Farav Yisrael, and we assume that at this point we're going to start getting some serious answers to the question of Manishtana, right? Wrong. It turns out that Avadim Ayinu is just an introduction to some, I mean, it's a nice story, but certainly isn't very important for Yisrael Yisrael. We end, after two lines of discussing Avadim Ayinu L'Farav Yisrael, we go into this Abiyu Kulanu Chavamim, Kulanu Nevamim, Kulanu and so on and so forth. Now, what is the point of throwing in this matzah in the middle of nowhere over here? I understand that it seems to be an indication that it's relevant. In other words, if even Talmidei Chachamim, we end up saying V'havi L'Yimot HaMashiach and Bayom and V'Laila, it's all always relevant. So it's a very nice thing to bring, but not here. It's a nice thing to bring before you begin the mitzvah. It's sort of like a hinani mukhan of mezuzah, the guy misses a sayach kippur, he has to try him. And you know how great this mitzvah is, ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, and afilu kolano chachamim, we should pay attention to this, and here we go. And then we should start magid. Instead, we start magid, we say manishtana, we even begin the answer. Finally, the kids are getting interested in something, something to discuss. And then after saying, I want to make a part of the mitzvah, we start telling them about some rabbis that were sitting around in Bnei Brak, which is probably the last thing they want to hear at this point. So why do we interrupt the Seder and put it over here? And then, after this, loving the Moshe Mashiach, this is really wild. We start talking about Baruch HaMokom, Baruch Hu, and singing and so on, like a spontaneous outburst of praise before we've even said anything about anything. I mean, at the Ma'aseh of Rebbe Eliezer, was it really that exciting that we all have to start singing Baruch HaMokom, Baruch Hu? I mean, if we're going to put it anywhere, then it ought to appear later on with the Hallel parts of the Haggadah. There's a whole section that's miyuchad for Hallel and saying nice things about what it is that Hashem has done for us. So, let's put Baruch HaMokom Baruch Hu together with the Hallel. Then, things get worse. Because now, we start going Kineged Arba Abanim Dibratah. Now, if there's Arba Abanim, and the issue of these Arba Abanim is how they ask questions, so Chachama Omer Rasha Tam Chenir De'elish Ol. Then why didn't we say that before the question? I mean, if this is supposed to be an introduction into how people ask questions and how it is that we're supposed to respond to the questions, and there's no question about the fact that the Torah here is teaching us very important things. There's indications here at how one deals with different types of personalities and tailors responses to those personalities and so on. But doesn't it make sense to introduce the question of She'ela with the psukim that relate to She'ela and say, here the Torah has told us that there is a mitzvah of questioning and how one asks the questions is an indication of what type of human being is, how one responds to the question is central to how one relates to a child that passes on one's own point of view and one's own dedication to ideals and so on. Good. To say that, before you start with the manishtana, in other words, the right order should have been halak ma'anya, or something equivalent to it, before kiddush, inviting people in, giving kiddush, then getting up to magid, saying ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yeshua to show this is a very important mitzvah that we're about to do, then going ahead and say, well, the Torah talks about arba bani who ask questions, then say, okay, now we're going to start the questions that the Torah was referring to, say the manishtana, and then beginning directly, Abadim, you know the problem with Mitzrayim, and you want to talk about these other things, that's fine. And then go ahead and talk about the various nations and so on. But this particular organization doesn't seem to make any sense at all. Now, we then go on to Higata Talamincha Yoko Mirosh Chodesh Tamadomar Bayom Ahu. Now, why in the world, if we're already at, if we really have serious doubts as to when to begin the Haggadah, and we were wondering about whether it should be done from Rosh Chodesh, shouldn't we have thought about that before the 15th at night? I mean, it would have made sense to give us an opportunity, at least to discuss the issue, so that if it turned out that we were right in thinking it was Rosh Chodesh, so maybe we'd have a few minutes to do it before the Seder. But no, we wait already till it's the night, and for some reason, smack bang in the middle of the Seder, Mike. Smack bang in the middle of the Seder, when we're already doing it, we're obviously convinced that now's the time to do it. We suddenly remember, oh, wait a minute. Actually, we should have considered the question about whether this is time to make a Seder at all. That certainly doesn't make any sense. This should come as an introduction to the introduction. Or before we talk about the Chiyuv of Sefer Yetziyat Mitzrayim, so then we should say, okay, this is a tremendously important Chiyuv of Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer. You want to know when the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is specifically this night. And therefore we should go about our business of being Mekayim this mitzvah now, after you understand that it's a fee of the Arisa now, and it's an important mitzvah even for Kulano Kakonim and Avonim. Now, fine. What are we doing after we've already done the Manishtan? We're talking about the Arba Abanim. We're about to begin Mitzchilot the Abba Dezorah Yavaseinu. And then, for some reason, we get into this Mitzchilot the Abba Dezorah Yavaseinu. Now, let's say Mitzvah Odeh Avodah Zorah Hayav Aseinu. Let's say just for sake of argument. But the reason that we're doing this with Kilo Oyo of the Avodah Zarah, which doesn't have anything to do with the Avodah Zarah, just on the surface. Let's say that we want to give some historical background. We're going to have the historical background as it ends over here, Yaakov, Banav, Yardu, Mitzrayim. So in order for us to understand why, how we got to Mitzrayim, we start with the story of Terach and Avram and so on. Well, number one, it doesn't give any historical background. As a matter of fact, the most incredible thing happens is that it ignores the whole story. It just says, Ekachat Avichem is Avram, Abraham, Nahar. And then it says, Vetemot Yitzchak, Vetemot Yitzchak of Yaakov et Esav, Vetemot Yitzchak of Har Seir, Vyakov Anav, Yardu Mitzrayim. It says nothing happened in between. Now, we're going to very sneakily introduce what happened in between. What happens in between? Yaakov goes to Laban, he marries the daughters, and all of the stories that happens over there, 21 years of a very difficult life. And we're going to figure out a way to fit this in, you understand? Because we're going to say, V'isha amdal avasteno, and then we're going to say, Tse ulmat, ma'vikesh laban arami. So, maybe, even though this doesn't present us with any real historical background, at least it presents us with an excuse to begin discussing historical background, which, for some reason, is important for us to understand in terms of Laban, even though that seems to predate Mitzrayim, it's not really central to Mitzrayim. For the sake of argument, let us say that. Now, why does it say, after V'yakov v'anav yordu Mitzrayim, why does it say, Baruch Shomer Abtachato in Yisrael? Again, we're doing this business. We haven't said anything. We haven't said what happened. We haven't talked about anything that takes place in order to accomplish the Yetzia. Not the mention of a nate, not the mention of Paro's even taking us as Avonim at this point. We ended that story. Maybe we're supposed to remember. Well, okay, well, you understand, Avonim Ayinu L'Paro Mitzrayim, that had to have been sometime during that period of Yaakov, Avonim Yodim Mitzrayim. So now getting back to the original story, I mean, that's sort of funny. What, we're leaving out all the important information. Well, what about the Nisim? I thought we were supposed to, Rama said, the Sefer of the Nisim is closed, and that's about the data. Well, what happened to it? No, one word. Does it make sense to say, Baruch Shomer Tachatoli Yisrael at this point? Makes sense to say Baruch Shomer Tachatoli Yisrael as an introduction to Hallel. So we should say, Yaakov one of Yorim Yisrael, and there, Paro was Meshaved us. Matter of fact, here would be the right place to bring in Avodah Mayinu L'Paro in Mitzrayim. After we've given the historical introduction, now say Avodah Mayinu L'Paro in Mitzrayim. I think maybe we should put out a new Haggadah, revised Haggadah, with some kind of reasonable structure. So we should have Mitzvah of Avodah Zarah Yavasinu, get into Avodah Mayinu L'Paro in Mitzrayim, say over some of the Nisim and so on that appear at the end, and then say Baruch Shomer Abtachato Yisrael, and then say Hallel, and then have the rest of the night to jazz it up a little bit and give over for Areza Meshubach people. But no, we go right into this Baruch Shomer Abtachato for absolutely no reason. And worse. The next thing that we do, many people stand up at this point, and we say, Ah, v'hi she'amna l'avotenu v'lanu, and so on and so forth. Now, this is all very nice if you're a member of a conservative congregation and you're trying to make the Haggadah relevant. So you say, listen, ladies and gentlemen, there's Jews in Russia that haven't gotten out, Jews in Iraq, God only knows. And every generation, they're always after us, and therefore you should look at the time as being relevant in some way. I understand that you make some pathetic attempt to turn Yetzias Mitzrayim into current events class, and that's supposed to give people a feeling that they're really dealing with Yetzias Mitzrayim. But obviously, that's not the intent of the Balei Haggadah. That's not the intent of the writing. So the problem is, what then is the intent? We haven't said over any of the Nisim. We haven't really talked about the Yetzia except in one word, and that was a few pages back where we said, period. That's all that we said. So why now, in the middle, before we've even begun discussing it, why are we talking about the Yisham, the Lavateno Velano, as if it's important? It's not even all that important. Why should we know the Yisham? First of all, we didn't say the Yisham. What does it mean, the Yishanda? God promised to take us out of Mitzrayim, so he took us out of Mitzrayim. Thank you. So what does that mean? The Yishanda, does that imply, therefore, he also promised to protect us from the Russians? What does one have to do with the other? And even if it did, why would we be saying it at this point? Well, you know what it turns out that the Yishanda is? A crummy excuse to get into talking about love on our army that had been left out from the story before, because over there it just said Yaakov is running over to Mitzrayim. So it's as if we're angry at Yoshua for leaving out a big piece over here. So now the Breitzer wants to get in, since this is about love, on which Yoshua had left out his original Sukkim, were taken from Yoshua. The Terach of Yavram, all that came from Yoshua. So we say, how are we gonna bring you all that into the picture? We can't just say, oh, by the way. So we have to do something nice. So what do? We say, well, it's wonderful. Hashem made a promise in every generation. He keeps that promise to us. He's going to rescue us, so to speak, from all our enemies, even though nobody ever heard about such a promise. And then we bring proof. Tehillim Lamad, here is the big proof. What's the proof? And this is a pretty screwy proof. The proof is that Lavan Arami, who lived before we got to Mitzrayim, was trying to destroy Yaakov Avinu, and had he destroyed Yaakov Avinu, we never would have gotten to Mitzrayim. Well, so obviously I understand, if I could work with El Avram Avinu, that your children are going to go down to Mitzrayim, and that they are going to be taken out of Mitzrayim, then it wouldn't do any good for the ending of the story to let Lavan Arami. It wouldn't do any good to let Lavan Arami destroy Yaakov before the story happens, right? But how does that prove that after the Yitzhak Mitzrayim takes place, and then we are 2,000 years later, or 3,000 years later, worrying about Russian Jewry, that you should then say, Sail Ahmad, because after all, there was love in Aram. So, it's some type of inexcusable excuse to allow us to get into the story of love in Aram. And now we don't even know what is so important about love in Aram, right? So we don't understand how this is approved, and we don't understand why we even have to know about love in Aram. But at least the next part makes sense, except for a terrible thing. It turns out that this interruption never ends. We begin discussing love in Aram, so we say, how are we supposed to learn about love in Aram? Right? Nice pasuk, beautiful pasuk. A good introduction to all of the hundreds of sukkim in the various parshas that describe the nisim of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, right? There's only one problem. It's this single pasuk that is the rest of our God. Nothing else to discuss. That's the end of our God. The rest of our God talks about this pasuk. Okay, now let's analyze this pasuk. Vayered Mitzrayim. Oh, that means Anasafi Adim. And then it says Vayareva Sunam Mitzrayim. Oh, that means etc. etc. And then it says Vayitzak Hashem Elokeinu. Oh, well, that means, you know what that means. And Vayotzieinu, you know what that means. Oh, and by the way, there's even one word over here that talks about Otok and Motim, and if we analyze it and we start putting together, well, yeah, Yod Kazorka, that's two, Zorana Tuya, that's two, Margotel is two, Otok is two, Motim is two, five times two, that's ten. Now, there'd be nowhere else in the Torah we could possibly get an idea that we're ten makas, but over here we have this fantastic remnant. In the middle of the story of love on Arami, we have a fantastic remnant that there's going to be ten makas in Mitzrayim, and therefore we build the entire Agada around this. What was it? A tangent of a tangent. We start off with a tangent of Yishanda. Then we get into another tangent in order to talk about Rabban Aram. So then, instead of ever getting back to our God, we sort of forgot in the middle of a tangent. So we take some silly word that we're going to be about Ayin and Medoctic, and maybe from here we can see a remnant that there were ten plagues, where the Torah gives us hundreds and hundreds of words describing in all types of detail what the ten markets were, how Paro reacts to the ten markets, and so on and so forth. We don't care. The fact that the Torah says, talk about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we decided maybe it'd be a better job if we sort of found out about Yitzhak Mitzrayim through discussing love on our own. It's outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous. And before we ever get to discussing Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we'd start talking about Dayin. Dayin. You haven't said anything yet. How's it Dayin? You're coming out of Thomas Lamakamalina. We go through all these various things. Again, not talking about this. Oh, no, a little bit. We mentioned the 10 markers. Throw around a little bit of wine. And that seems to be it. Except for Pesach Matzah Mor, which is very nice. And we get into Hallel, and we get into a meal. And that basically is. And my gosh, what a deflating experience. And here we are, ready to really get into Mitzrayim. There's nothing about Mitzrayim. It turns out that the entire Agada is one enormous tangent from beginning to end, which might be excusable if you'd ever get back to the story, but not if you lose track of where you're going. And this, gentlemen, is what is known as the Seder, which means the organization of the Inyanim of the Yemen. And I think that you would agree that we have some problems. And that being as we do believe wholeheartedly that Chazal did a very excellent job of organizing material, knowing precisely what they were doing and giving us an insight into what the Agada is all about, it seems quite incredible that this should be the case. And therefore, I think that it behooves us all to sit and figure out why this is happening. And one of the most incredible things is that when you look into the details of the Haggadah, you discover that the Haggadah is a precisely orchestrated instrument that is based on very, very specific and exacting instructions given over in the Mishnah, brought in the Rambam Lahalok, and from there the development of all of your various... Somebody, do we have a Maseches Pesachim here? I again forgot to bring Maseches Pesachim. If somebody would be kind enough to dash out, bring a Maseches Pesachim, and also please bring your Chamishah Chum Shitor, although I think I see one. Is that a Chamishah Chum Shitor? No. Just bring like a Tanakh or something. You do have one? Oh, we do have a Chamishah Chum Shitor. A full Chamishah Chum Shitor. Great. Okay, please open up your Rambams now to Perek Zayin, Halacha Daled. Shilat Filbignu, Sayin B'Sheva. Now, we discussed a number of important things in Agada before. We saw that you have to make a declaration. We saw that there have to be questions involved in Agada. And we mentioned in passing this requirement. Now, this requirement we understood to be a result of the din of zechira, which means to come to be conscious of change, to be able to make distinctions, and therefore you have to know the difference between what was and what is, which is the point of manishtana, what has changed, not why is tonight different, ridiculous, even in translation it's absurd, because that's not the translation, the correct translation of the word manishtana, but the question is not ma shoneh alayla azeh, but ma nishtana alayla azeh. So, here the Rambam articulates that fear. Thank you very much. How am I supposed to find things in a Hebrew English? What? Oh my God. I'll never find them. Totally confusing. You've got to be kidding me. I don't understand it. Help. Grief. All right. So, says the Rambam, Tzorachot Fil Bignut V'Lasayim B'Sheva. Now, what does this mean? You have to begin with something that is debasing, censure, and you have to end with Sheva, whatever that is. We have to talk about what Sheva is. Ketza. Matkilu misaper shebitkila yu avotinu bimei terach kufrim to'im achar hevel rotim achar avot zora, very nice. Misayim b'dat ha'emet shekirvanu amokam lo v'yivdilonu min ato'im v'kirvanu v'yichudo. So we have to begin saying how bad things were and end with the fact that Hashem has brought us to Him and has given us the Torah and so on. The chain, and another thing that he can do to bring out the change is Matzilu Modiyah Shavadim Ayinu Leparo B'Mitzrayim V'Chol Ara'a Shegimah Lanu Misayim B'Nisim V'Nifroch Na'aso Lanu U'B'Cheirutein. So we begin discussing Avdut, we end with Cheirut, in order to stress the change, the Manishtaneh, Now listen to these incredible words, gentlemen. But who? And what do I mean when I say that we must do this? How is one Yosei Vechiev that I just described, says the Rambam? There is only one prescribed way of being able to be Yosei Vechiev. One and only one. But who? She Yidrosh Mi'arami Ovid Ovi Achik Mar Kol HaPar. The way to be Mekayim, the mitzvah, is only by using the parsha that begins Arami Ovid Ovi about love on Arami. The Kol HaMosif HaMarech, did you think that Kol HaMosif If you're not interested, go to sleep. That's what they're doing in meditators where people can't stay up. Go to love people. So, did you think that there's an Indian of being marvelous, soccer, Yitzhak Mitzrayim? No. That's not what Ram says. Ram says, Kol HaMosifu Ma'arich B'drash Parsha Zo, and it's in the Shubach. The more you have to say about this parsha that has nothing to do with Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the better off you are. And that doesn't sound the same at all as Halacha Aleph, where the Rambam said Kol HaMarver, where is that? I'm using a different Rambam. I'm sorry, now look at Gimel. Somebody has a normal. This Rambam, I just can't find anything. Okay, Kol HaMarich B'dvarim Shir'u B'Shayu Hareza Mishubah. At the end of Halacha, whoever is Marva, speak about the things that occurred in Mitzrayim, Hareza Mishubah. Now, there's two completely different issues over here. Here it says, Kol Hamar Mosifu Marich B'drash Parsha Zeh Hareza Mishubah. That's a different issue. The Rambam seems to be saying that the only way in which one can be Mekayim D'Agada is by saying Arami Ovid Ovi. So he doesn't look at the Haggadah as being accidentally, tangentially discussing love and haram, not by any means. The Rambam sees the Haggadah as being a direct expression of the chiyuv that is involved in Haggadah. And that chiyuv is for some reason to say over a parsha which is introduced in the Torah in a completely different context. The context of that parsha is what? Parshat Bikurim. In Kitavo. Which doesn't have anything to do with it. You got the Ayom Lachem Lachem Givati Al-Haras and so on and so forth. Now this is not the Rambam Kiddush, obviously, it's the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking, says, Rav Kook Tzayin, L'fi da'ato shel ben aviv Lupi da'ato shel ben aviv melamdo, matchil b'gnut, u'misayim b'sheva, v'doresh me'arami oved avi, achig mor kol ha'parasha kula. So in other words, the Haggadah is simply following the instructions of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, in order to be yotzei the Haggadah, you have to be doresh arami oved avi. Now maybe you'll say that the Haggadah introduced arami oved avi in a very sneaky way, because it may pretend that it was in terms of isha amda, whereas really it was just an excuse to get through the pasuk of Arami Ovid Ovi and be Dorishit. But that's not so terrible. And maybe we'll even be able to figure out that it wasn't even tangential or sneaky. Maybe the way in which it was brought was important. But the question is, why? Where would we get the idea that of all things we should ignore all of the beautiful parshas in Shmos that talk about Yitzhak Mitzrayim in minute detail, all of the midrashim, they're all concentrated in Shmos. You turn to Kitavo and you open up your Medrash Rabbah and you try to find all of the midrashim in Yitzhak Mitzrayim, you will not find them there. So why would we turn away from Shmos, go towards the end of the Torah in Ki Tavoh, and begin reading Vayat Ki Tavoh Al Haaretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Noten Lecha Nachala, Lakachta Mireshit Kol Pri Adama, Uvata La Kohena Sheyeva Yamim Ahem, Vilakacha Kohena Tena Miyadecha, and then you start saying, Arami Ovid Ovi, Vayir Yisrael. Why? It's a different issue. This is a nice thing to do for Shavuot. Yom HaBikurim, great thing to do for Shavuot. Well, why would we do it on Pesach? And the answer is really quite simple. The answer is because, before I say the answer though, I should tell you something else. We talked about breaking the matzah. Why did we break the matzah? Who knows why we break the matzah? I mentioned it before, let's not register. Why do we break the matzah? Or why do we need a broken matzah? Forget about the actual breaking it. But why do we need a broken matzah? Yes. And why must we act like a niyam? No. No. Why must we act as if we are a niyam? No, it's a pasuk. No, you just said it. Somebody said it. No, no. Holakmania, but why do we make it Holakmania? The Torah uses the word as a description of matzah. It calls it lechem oni. Now, lechem oni is an unusual word. It means poor man's bread, but it has a different meaning as well. What's the other meaning that goes hand in hand with? Answer. So the Gemara says, well, there's three things that that implies, the word lechem oni. Yes. Inui, correct, which relates to the oni of the year, absolutely. So, says the Gemara, there are really different aspects of lechem oni. Number one, you should eat a prusa, because darko shel oni is the prusa. He can't afford a whole bread, so he buys leftover bread pieces that haven't been sold, and he gets it cheaper, that's it there. Or, lechem oni implies that it must be matzah and not chametz. How does oni have anything to do with chametz? Well, you see, if you're poor, you don't have much fuel. So therefore, you have to be baking very rapidly, because otherwise your oven's going to cool. So if you're going to bake bread, it would make sense to bake it in a way that you wouldn't sit around waiting for your next dough to rise, simply throw it in and make sure that it bakes instantly. The third thing the Gemara says is, lechem oni means lechem sha'onim ala dvarim. Bread that requires you to say things about. And that refers to the Haggadah, that we say over the bread. And therefore, in a sense, it's similar to the post that we had about Babur Zed. Sha'ar shemata murmatz marorim u'minochim lefonah. That's what's mechayev you to speak. So that the bread itself is mechayev the anita. Now, let me ask you something. Is that not a very interesting lotion to use for speech? Can you tell me why it would be particularly nogea Pesach to call it onim? It's rather obvious. Yes?
Because you're asking the question.
Exactly. It's not just lechem oni in the sense of saying things. It's lechem oni in the sense of answering things. So ania has sort of a double meaning in Hebrew. It means to answer, but it also means to state unequivocally. You can be anisa even though you're not giving the answer to the question. But certainly every answer to a question needs to be specific, exact, and direct. Therefore, we call an answer, a solution, aniya, as opposed to just an amiravion. If somebody's not being very specific and he's just sort of, you know, messing around and he's saying, well, maybe this, maybe that, then it's not aniya, but it's also not unequivocal. So, you know, that means that there are two things that define the way in which we must speak on this night. What are the two words that define how we must speak that we've now seen? One is the lashon that we just discussed, which is oni, to be one. The other is a lashon of, yes, no, magid. Be God Selavim Chah. This is what we're learning from. Would you believe that there's only one place in the Torah that those Lashonos appear? Guess where? Listen to this. It says, Ubata El HaKohen Be'amarta Elah He got it the Ayom LaShem Elokech. And then the Kohen takes the tenor, the Anita, the Amarta, the Tnei Hashem Elokecha, Arami Ovedati. Stunned. The place that the Torah says, here is what one says when one is being Magid, here is what one says when one is being Oneh, is the word Arami Ovedati. So we haven't just picked this up out of a hat. It's not tangential. It's the essence of what the Torah itself has defined as the Chiyuv of Hagana. If we're told that we must be Onan, and we're told we must be Magid, then we have to look in the Torah and say, well, what would the Torah refer to if it uses those words? There's only one thing that fits the bill. And that is, for some mad reason, the Psukim of Arami Ovidavi. So, although to the naive reader, Hagana seems to be doing something which is inexcusable and tangential, in fact, what the Haggadah is doing is it's made a very accurate analysis of the words that the Torah uses to define the Tzibuyim, has found where it is that the Torah does this, has brought over that Tzibuyim into the Haggadah, and now has said that the entire Tzibuyim of the Haggadah can only be within the context of Arami Ovidavi. And if you want to discuss the Haggadah, you must discuss Arami Ovidavi, and therefore the Rama says it's only people who are Marba. Most people marif midrash parsevel is the mishavah. Not time to talk about whatever you feel like talking about, hashkafas and so on and so forth. Go open up Arami Ovidavi because that's what the Torah says. Teach from Nisim v'amarta. That's what the Torah says. Is be God. It's rather astonishing. I mean, the fact that that's the way it is doesn't help us understand it any better. I mean, we now see that we can have faith in what the Haggadah is doing. But the Bala Haggadah wrote a Haggadah that was medaktik, clearly in every word, the Torah was mitzvah, and that the Mishnah is a reflection of the Chiyuvim, brought Malach of how to read. Well, what in heaven's name would it mean? Why should we go to Arami Ovidavi, and why would we use the Vehisha Amdal Abaseinu V'lanu as an excuse to get into Arami Ovidavi? Why not just say Arami Ovidavi? Do we need an excuse? Did we have to fit it in into the Mitzchilot Le'avodah Zarah Hayav HaSeinu? Let me ask you something. Vehi Sh'am. What is the Vehi? What Vehi? I mean, we say the word Vehi Sh'am. Can you tell me what the Vehi is? Hashem is a he or a she? Well, he is a who. And what's the name? It's Yitzhak Mitzrayim with Omid for love and Aram. You can't be referring to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. I mean, that's going to happen hundreds of years before Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
The Torah?
Mm-hmm.
The Torah?
The Yisham, the love. We had a Torah with love in our arms? That's a couple of beliefs. You mean to tell me that all these years you've been reading these words, the Yisham, that you didn't even know what the He was? Which Haftacha? Oh, Rizbin Absorium, indeed. That's the only Haftachot that we have from our Kodesh. Nobody ever promised us, God never says, I will protect you from everybody. No such thing. God never says that somebody tries to enslave you, I'll get you out. No, he doesn't say anything of the sort. But one, he does give one haftarah. We do have a promise from him. That promise is embodied in the Brisbane of Sardis. What is that promise?
Peter around you.
Go down to Egypt. Get out of Egypt. So how does that help us? Hishamda b'chodor v'dor. How does that? That can't be it. Because that's not what Hishamda b'chodor v'dor is. So, they multiplied in Egypt too?
So in all the generations, people came up and tried to destroy it. Still, we survived there until people go multiply and grow.
But that wouldn't have been enough for Yitzchak to try, and we could have multiplied and grown in Egypt itself. It can't be Aftoka that we will multiply. Besides, who says that Aftoka is Chal after Yitzchak to try? Maybe it's only part of promise that there will be Yitzchak to try. What do we see in that Aftoka that leads us to believe that we have a right to assume that there's going to be some kind of divine intervention to save us from the hold of the door, hungry millennial of God will sing? Yes, right. That's correct. Josh is 100% correct. The only aspect of that, the Chal that stands, is Eretz Yisrael. There's nothing else. The Avtocha was Lazarka that came, and that's it. Because of that Avtocha, we recognize that our not being in Eretz Yisrael is a violation of what it is that God says needs to be, and therefore we are absolutely convinced, because of the base of our brief in Avtocha, that we will in fact be at one time back and live in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the words that we say, which is what Parshat Bikurim is all about, are in fact central to Yitzrayim. And you see Yitzrayim. Well, the Ma'id of what? The Ma'id of Kirashena. Exactly. The Arida de Mitzrayim was for a lack of clarity about Yerusha's Zoharas, correct? Then that means that the idea from Mitzrayim is only complete when there is no longer that lack of clarity. The distance between B'ma'ida and Higatzi Ayom L'Hashem Elokecha Kibati Al Ha'aretz Asher Nishba Hashem L'Avakil Avram Mitzrayim V'Yachol Batei Lanu is the distance between all of the events that lead to Yerusha's Mitzrayim and all of the purpose in Yitzchak Mitzrayim and the reason that we had a right to be convinced that would happen. But that's just not we're talking out of our hat. Yeah, well, yeah, I thought that's sort of, I guess we needed to get this a point that we needed to get there as well, and therefore we can be sure. It's that the entire purpose of Yerusha's Mitzrayim was to enable us to get to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the moment that we can say, Yigatzi Ayom Hashem Elokecha, we are now discussing the whole point of the Yitzchak. Whatever it was that was missing that led to the Yerida is here defined in the Arami Ovid Ovi, which is what a man says the day that he recognizes and declares that he is indeed a Yoresh Ha'aretz. And what does he say when he's a Yoresh Ha'aretz? He says, Arami Ovid Ovi. If that's the case, says the Torah, that's what you must say every Pesach night, because that's the only purpose. That's the only reason. That's the only process. There's nothing else being discussed here. There's no other Havdakha that's being discussed here. And therefore we get up and we say, Arami Ovid Ovi. Which is exactly what we would have done had we been bringing Mikurim. From a lack of clarity of understanding, what would be the point? How can I be sure? I don't believe, as the Gemara says, what if my children sin? Then do they still get Eretz Yisrael? And Hashem says, you know what, Avram? I can't even answer those questions because basically they're off the wall. The only way for you to learn how off the wall they are is to recognize the meaning of the Havdalah. I'm not trying to bring proof to you that I'm doing it. Because you can't prove something to someone. What Hashem said to Avram Avinu was not that I'm going to give you the land, mind you, Kunesh. When Avram Avinu first came down to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem told him, Lech Lecha. He comes in, and you know what happens? He comes into Eretz Yisrael, and God appears to him.
And it says, Vayera Hashem al Avram, Vayomer, the Zaracha etain at the Aretz Hazot. So what does he do? Vayiven Shem Mizbeach LaHashem Anir Eila. Why? It's Rashi, because of the Torah that Eretz Yisrael was going to be given. So did he make any problems about it? Did he start saying, well, now I'm not so sure about all this? No, very simple, no problem. Perfectly happy. This is the very, very beginning of Lech Lecha. Yet for some reason, when we get to read Rein HaPtarim, and Hashem says to him, he says to him that, Ko Yezarecha, fine, he believes he's going to have children. Then he says, Ani Hashem asher otitnicha miur katzim latepecha ataret hazok urishta. And he says, oh, Vayomer Hashem Elokim b'moed akir Hashem. Why didn't he say that? Why didn't he say that when he was told straight out? What is the difference between the first and the second Amira here? Very clearly, the difference is in one word. Akir Hashem. The first Haptocha was that I am going to give this land to your children. It doesn't guarantee there a Yerusha. A Yerusha means something that you can't break away from. It'll chase you even if you don't want it. It's not a kinyan, it's a Yerusha. The second one says, Lurishta. So Avram says, Lurishta? But my God, Yerushena. Is there a way to prove that to somebody? Can you give it to him? Can you show 10 generations living there? I'll say, okay, 10 generations. But why does that mean Lurishta? What if there's a war tomorrow? What if my children sin? They no longer act Jewish? How do I know that this is a Yerusha in the sense that no matter what happens in the course of history, no matter how far my children stray, they forget about my name, they forget about the land of Israel, they don't know anything. How can I be certain that they will eventually be back right here? How can I know that? Says Hashem, you know something, Avram? There's no way for you to know that except to go down to Mitzrayim. Yodot Edah, you will know it only when Yer Yezaracha. Why? We'll have to discuss this. But clearly, as we talked about last week, the lesson in Mitzrayim was not a matter of being Zochet or something. The aspect of Mitzrayim is growing up. It's learning what your identity is. And that's why it was God, remember? That's why it needed speech. That's why it needed consciousness. That's why it's described in terms of relationship. So the whole purpose of the Yetziah is in order to attain God. The reason that one needs to attain God is because the depth of connection that a person has to people, to relationships, to objects, and to the land in which he lives, is death as a function of the extent of his own identity. To the extent that he is aware of himself, understands the meaning of his own existence, and his place in the scheme of things as much as a human being can, to that extent, he cannot violate what his existence is all about. To the extent that he has doubts about it, to that extent it isn't real to him. Says Hashem to Avram, if you're asking the question, it means that it can't have an answer. Because there's nothing I can do to provide you with an identity. And if you are not convinced that the essence of your life is so bound up in this land that it's impossible for your children to stray far enough not to get back, then it's time for a little less. Maybe like 400 years worth. Maybe like a couple thousand years worth, because all of the various Goliaths are Merumahs in there. But that pasuk is saying one thing very clearly. That all of the centuries that are spent in Golis are there in order to gain one thing and one thing only. The identity to be able to say, now I know. That's the only purpose. So therefore, when we talk about Bama'eda, when we talk about the gaining of identity and awareness that is involved in Mitzrayim, we're talking about the Seder and the Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. Again, it's not a commemoration. It's an actual creation of the same events in our own feelings, in our own connection, and more deeply, it's a creation of the same identity that allows us Eretz Yisrael. In that case, what is most important is understanding what does a man think when he comes to the Beit HaMikdash and he sits and he tells the Kohen, I am making a declaration that I now recognize that God was right when he said, the Zaracha attained. He knew what he was talking about. It was Lirishta. What did he think about? Well, it says in the Zohar what he thinks about. Now you want to understand it? Go and be Darshan Aram Yogadovi. That will give you the insight into how a person feels when he is standing there and feeling that way. And therefore, you too will be able to be free, meaning to have your own identity, and therefore be Zohar to Yetzias Mitzrayim with all the freedom that it implies. Because of this, obviously, we have to begin with the words of Yisham Dalavotinu Velam. Because the meaning of Yisham Da now is seen as Larishta. What else does it mean? It means that promise to Avram was not a promise to Avram. It was a promise to the identity of Avram, which is innate in all of us. And therefore, it means that it's Nogea always. And now that I see it tonight, the center of the entire Agoda are those words, Yishamda. It's not an attempt to make it relevant. It's the actual recognition that there is nothing else that is relevant. Because in applying Avtocha to Avram Avinu 4,000 years ago to what is happening today in Kiryat Yovel or wherever else it happened, then that is the deepest recognition that a human being can have as the extent of the historical continuity, the depth of his own identity as a Jew, and the extent of his commitment to what that identity is behind. Those words of Isha Amda are therefore said by many people standing up. Because that is the deepest understanding, the deepest awareness that we attain actually at the time of Agoda. The rest is now an attempt, now that I say, those words, Behisha Amda, are the equivalent of, Higati Ayom Hashem Lokem HaKibat Yavar. The next words after the Kohen takes the ten Amiyadah, where you define what it is that you were about to do, now you go ahead and do it. And what is it you do? You Darshan Aram Yovidov. There's only two places in the entire Torah that we have to say what we are going to do before we do it. And that is the Agoda Shel Pesach. We say before we eat this matzah, why are we eating this matzah? And the other point is Mikra Bikur. We walk over to the Kohen and say, Kohen, you're about to hear me say Arami Ovidov. The reason that you're about to hear me say Arami Ovidov is because he got the Ayom Lashem Lokefi Kibat Yelaharas. Here, have this. He takes this, and then I say Arami Ovidov. That's exactly what I'm doing over here. I get up and I say, Yisharm Galavatin of Balon. And then I say, okay, now you're ready? Arami Ovidovi by Eretz Mitzrayim. And in that I relive what every Jew lived when he walked into the Beit HaMikdash, bringing his fruits, sensing the depth of his connection to the land that he had to learn over a period of centuries. His own self dwelling up, his own national self dwelling up to be able to view as a Yerusha. To be continued.